Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest of them all, our good pal BFD. How are you doing tonight, man?
That's me weeping, by the way. That's as good as I can do is crying. I'm the worst actor ever.
Yeah.
Just the worst.
Well, the sun's already finished setting, so you can't look at that glowing bronze light and be like, oh, wow, it's the springtime, and then romantically cry, you know?
Right. Yeah. No.
So last.
Hi, Matt.
Yeah. How's it going? So last Thursday, I think it was last Thursday, the Texans traded for Brandon Cooks, and they gave up the 57th overall pick, and they also received a 2022 fourth round pick by doing so. Cooks has a cap hit of $8 million this year. The Texans can release him next year and pay him exactly $0, and then he has cap hits of like $12 million, $14 million, $14 million, and the Rams end up paying an $8 million roster bonus by trading Cooks to Houston, pay the rest of his guaranteed money, and they took a dead cap hit of like $24 million for making this trade. So by the Texans standards, the acquisition of Brandon Cooks was underwhelming because this wasn't as exciting as trading Jadeveon Clowney or DeAndre Hopkins or trading for Laremy Tunsil. But for most franchises, this would be an enormous, interesting decision. And for Houston, this is just the new normal. It's just another day in Houston Texans land. But despite this, there's a lot to unpack here. And the first thing I want to talk about is Cooks as the player. So Cooks in 2018 and 2019 were two entirely different players. And if you look at the numbers, Cooks still played in 14 games in 2018. There's not like a dramatic difference in games played, but there are for statistics. And so in 2018, Cooks had 80 catches for 1,204 yards, which was 15.1 yards a catch. His average depth of target was 15.1 yards as well. He had 70 first downs too. In 2018, he had 42 catches for 583 yards, 13.9 yards a catch. And his DVOA dropped from 21.5%, which is 12th, to 0%, which is 46th. And his DYAR from 313, which was 10th, to 71, which is 49th. And so this will be his age 27 season. What was the difference in, like, what happened to Cooks between 2018, 2019 to go from being like a fringe top 10 receiver to maybe one of the 50 best receivers last year?
I'm going to go straight to, I think, kind of the heart of the matter of this entire trade is that Brandon Cooks got his fifth concussion last year in the NFL. And I think what we've seen is there's just no easy way to put it. And I, you know, you guys know, or, you know, y'all know that I talked about my concussions here on BRR, but they pile up, you know, you just don't have a concussion and get over it. They pile up. And I think what happened was, and I'm so grateful that you got the stat on here, but after he got his concussion in Cincy, he went 15 for 37 for 100, 15 catches on 37 targets for 181 yards. I mean, I start to question when I see that kind of line, I start to question, is there something wrong with his eyesight? Is there something wrong with his balance? Is there something going on with his confidence even? So when I see that drop in the stat line or those numbers kind of fall off, and I'm going to go back in a moment and talk about yards per catch too, is that what I see is I see somebody who is not physically capable of doing what they need to do. And, you know, Jared Goff wasn't all of a sudden like one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. He wasn't great last year. But Sean McVay does a heck of a job scheming his guys open. That includes Brandon Cooks. The Rams are one of the best teams at creating space at the ends of routes, and Cooks could not do that. In fact, he was the worst at creating space at the end of routes. on separation. So, see, I even get a little bit nervous talking about it. But to me, when I see those kinds of numbers, nervous isn't the right word. It's upset. I get worried and upset when I see that, that I think there's a lot going on in Brandon Cook's body that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the player talking about that Cincinnati game, Cooks was, he ran a post route against cover three, and the middle of the field safety drove on it and hit him high, but it didn't look like the initial hit is where the is when the concussion happened. But, you know, Cooks is a little guy. He's 6 foot, he's 5'10", 180 pounds, and he got spun and fell on the back of his head. And then, like you mentioned, the numbers from that game on, he had 15 catches on 37 targets for 181 yards. And you know, he disappeared entirely last season. He was a ghost. And this is Cooks' fifth concussion as well, too. You know, last year, I do think he only had one really good game, and that was against Cleveland. And he had, you know, 8 catches for 112 yards and 14 yards a catch in that game. But one of the problems that the Rams did have, you know, if we're not talking about his injury history at all, was that they replaced the entire interior of their offensive line. So they no longer had an all-time great rushing attack. Todd Gurley never looked right last year. And Goff is kind of like Drew Brees in the fact that he can't play without a clean interior pocket. Like, Goff gets really scared of interior pressure because he doesn't have the athleticism to get away from it and run away from it and break tackles in the pocket. And he also doesn't have the footwork to be able to calmly step away from pressure or step up in the pocket and make throws. And so whenever you watch Goff last year, he dealt with a lot of interior pressure and he's stepping like way diagonal. He's falling backwards. He's, you know, he's throwing from these really funky arm angles. And yeah, I do think Cooks got open before his concussion downfield, but Goff just didn't have the perfect pocket to be able to deliver a lot of throws that he made in 2018. And so I do think Cooks' production drop off came from, you know, one, the concussions, and especially that one after Cincinnati, because he disappeared entirely last year after that happened. And then two, like the Rams just as an offense weren't nearly as good last year. And that was a direct result of their interior pass protection and, you know, the problems that Goff has whenever he deals with interior pressure.
Yeah, and those are great points, is that it was an altogether different team. We saw last year was kind of, for me, with when it came to the Rams, it was kind of this is a teaching moment about the importance of having a good offensive line. And we talk about it all the time in here. You know, the two most important things when you're a football team are getting the opposing quarterback dirty and keeping your quarterback clean. And so that fell apart for the Rams last year. So I think those are all great points. I think, you know, they did struggle offensively. They couldn't get the run game going, couldn't get the play action going, as the things you mentioned, but still, Robert Woods didn't fall off a cliff.
Yeah, and I mean, like, but again, that comes from that fifth concussion, though. You know what I mean? Like, he had a drop off up to that point, and that was kind of the result of the offense, but he disappeared and dropped off a cliff because of that fifth concussion, he had that injury. You know, Woods was healthy all of last year. Cooper Kupp was healthy all of last year. Higbee had a really great season last year. And, you know, Cooks didn't over 16 games because of that injury he had. And so, like, the concern here for one of the big concerns of this trade from a Texans, you know, perspective is just the fact that what are you going to get out of Cooks going forward? Like, is he going to be able to play like he did in 2018? Because even if he does play like he did in 2018, you know, there's an interesting question to ask. Like, would you rather just have that pick number 57 and not pay him $8 million, even if you could have a player like that because of the talent you already have at the receiver position too? And we can talk about that a little bit later. But like, let's say Cooks is healthy next season. And, you know, Cooks as a player, he's a really great deep threat. Since 2016, he's caught 2,034 yards on deep throws. And these are throws over 15 yards to the air. He has 62 catches, 139 targets, and 9 touchdowns. He's fourth in the NFL in deep passing receptions. What's fun about the way he runs deep routes is he's great running them out of wide alignment and also from the slot. So he's good at running like slot fades, but he's also good at running a slot and then running like an out and up. And he's really good at using speed to create separation. He's really good at waiting for cornerbacks to get out of their break and to start turning and running. He's able to cut those off too and turn those into easy comeback catches. My favorite route he runs is a corner route. He runs a really great corner, especially against like cover four and that sort of thing, to occupy the safety and get that cornerback to pass and then cut back behind him as well too. And he's mainly a really great like deep receiver when he's healthy, especially in New England. That was pretty much his role entirely, was just making deep catches down the field. And then Los Angeles, they used him a lot more on shorter routes and jet sweeps and screen passes. A lot of his short receptions mainly come from going up against off-man coverage. Like, whenever you watch Will Fuller play, he's not, like, really kind of creating separation out of a break against press man and catch and like boxing somebody out and catching a slant route. He's just like running curls against off man. He's running out routes against off man. And Brandon Cooks is really similar to that as well too.
Well, and that's one of the things that's also befuddling about this trade is we've got Brandon Cooks on the roster and he's named Will Fuller. Oh, and he's also named Kenny Stills. He's also kind of named Kiki Cutie in a lot of ways. The difference is Brandon Cooks has done a lot more outside, and he certainly has a better injury history when it comes to the soft tissue injuries, as you and I talked about, you know, before we started the show tonight. Mm-hmm. So we've got this guy is already on the roster, and which is, again, befuddling. I love that word to me about making this trade. Would you rather have the 57th, or would you rather have a guy who's hitting his, I think it's his age 28 season with five concussions. Is it 27? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like he's 31. I feel like he's been in the league forever.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
2012 seems like a decade ago, which it almost is, but.
It almost is. We're so as far as that goes, we didn't add a dimension to the team we didn't already have. And so I think UT put it the best. It's like, this is a dad, workaholic dad who like goes out and buys his daughter a horse because, you know, he's not around anymore and he needs to make up for some prior regressions. I mean, that's what this trade seems to be to me.
Yeah. We got rid of Hopkins. We have a plan. Don't worry about it. And your plan is here's your Brandon Cooks now. And the Hopkins trade is really important because, like you mentioned, Cooks is similar to Will Fuller. And so for first down receptions since 2016, Hopkins has 275 first down receptions, which is the third most in football, behind only Julio Jones and Michael Thomas. And we're looking at a difference here of like 9 first downs. Cooks has 176, which is 17th. Now, this is more than you'd expect. I would expect for him to have a lot less than 176, but like he's been, you know, kind of sort of a pseudo number one receiver, and a lot of his receptions become first downs because they're mainly deep down the field or they're wide open screen passes, those sort of things too. So what Houston really misses though, and what they currently have with their wide receiver position, is they have a lot of downfield receiving options, but they don't have that guy who can consistently go out and get first downs. And so I've seen some people compare the Texans strategy, maybe what Kansas City does, where it's about speed, it's about verticality. But what the Texans don't have is, as good as Fuller and Cooks are, they're not a generational talent. They're not Tyreek Hill. And they're not playing an offense that does a great job at creating other guys open with the speed. And the other thing is, they don't have a player like Travis Kelce. They don't have a third down safety blanket on third and long. So if it's third and eight and you have Kelce in the slot, you pretty much have a first down there, you know, 75% of the time. And the Texans lost that by trading DeAndre Hopkins. And so I think it's a great point by, you know, what you said with Cooks and Fuller, is that they have redundancy here. They have redundancy with Cooks, with Fuller. And I think Stills is maybe like, what, 80% of Fuller and Cooks. You know, he's never done it entirely, but they're kind of similar where he's a speed kind of downfield guy. And they're, it's just all too similar, you know?
Yeah, and I just think one of the questions we got just now, I don't know if you had the Twitter machine open, but Pastor Rick asked this question. It seems we need a contested ball receiver. A good receiver when it's third and five with a minute left on the final scoring drive, it will be clutch. Is that receiver on the team?
I mean,
and the
answer is
it isn't. I mean, are you gonna count on Daniel Fells to make that? Are you gonna count on one of the Jordans to make that?
I think Randall Cobb is supposed to be that, is the idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying that's what it is, but that's the idea here by giving him, you know, $9 million a year and having him play in the slot.
God! You know? How can you give him nine? I just don't. Oh, I can't wait till we start talking about money later, Matt. I cannot wait. But the answer is no. We don't have DeAndre Hopkins on this team anymore who has caught, you know, 275 first downs. In his career. I mean, we don't have
that
since
guy. 16, even. That's just since 2016. Because yeah. I just went with Cooks' sophomore year whenever he became a vital part of the offense in New Orleans that year. Well, I guess he was a vital part in 2015, but I don't know. 16 seemed a little bit cleaner or whatever. The other thing, and that question passed to Rick up, was the one thing I want to bring up too. So like Cooks, he doesn't really, like, he doesn't run slants against press coverage. He doesn't run like deep digs or drive routes at all. Like a lot of his open stuff that he gets on for first downs and shorter stuff is, again, like the cornerback's 8 yards off of him, and he uses his speed to create those throws. The biggest thing that Cooks can do, though, is he's not go up and get receiver. If you have a contested catch up there, he's not going to make that play. Cornerbacks, even like Zaire Alexander of Green Bay, he's 5'10". You know, he's not an, or I think, yeah, Alexander's 5'10". And he went up and jumped over Cooks multiple times in 2018 in Cooks's, you know, peak year in Los Angeles, and made plenty of plays against him at the catch point. And so for Cooks, like, everything's with speed, and he has to be open to make the catches that he makes too. It's not a situation where he's going to outleap a guy or box somebody out. These are all throws where he runs a great route and uses his speed to get open.
Yeah, and I also think one other thing that stood out to me about Cooks is his hands are smaller than mine.
That's cute.
Which is, I don't have the biggest hands in the world, y'all. You know, just saying. And he's got smaller hands than I do. So for a wide receiver,
I mean, it's worked for him for every year before last year, you know?
Right,
like, he's
right.
A very good receiver. And there's no question about that, but the questions come along with concussions and where he fits in with this offense. And one of the things I really liked about going into last year with this team was, you think, okay, well, they have Hopkins, Fuller, Stills, and Cutie. Those are four players aside from, you know, Fuller and Stills are kind of redundant. But, like, Stills is an awesome fourth wide receiver. Like, those are four receivers with all entirely different skill sets. And that's how I felt going into the 2019 season. It didn't play out like that, but on paper, that was one of the things that was, you know, kind of exciting about the Texans offense last year entering the season. And now with this wide receiver group, there isn't that sort of situation. Like, it's not like how Kansas City is. It's not like how some of these other teams are, where they have a receiver with, like, an exact specific role. I think New England did a really great job with how they used him in 17 as well, where, like, Cooks had this very specific role. So did Edelman, so did Gronk, and so did their pass-catching backs on the backfield. Like, everything, you know, really made sense and was nice and square with that 17 New England team that lost to Philly.
Yeah, and it's all about, Matt's kind of hit on it, but it's all about having the complementary pieces to your team. Like, you don't want four guys who do the same exact thing, and that's what we're looking at for a wide receiving car. Throw in DeAndre Carter to that, too. I mean, what else does he do?
Yeah.
You know, all we need to do is bring back, Eagles catch. God, I can't remember his name all of a sudden. Anyway, not with Star Gene.
Vincent Smith is, well, he's
Vincent
tall.
Smith, thank
he's
you.
Tall. At least he's 6'1".
Right, yeah. Yeah,
Limestone State University greatest.
But I think he'd be the tallest wide receiver on the roster if he was still on it.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't have complementary pieces. And let's bring up one more thing, because one of the things that I've seen on the Twitters especially is that Tim Kelly is going to come in and he's going to have this wide open offense, right? I hope I didn't skip to something ahead later on, but Tim Kelly's going to have this wide open offense. We're going to be running this run and shoot, like 1980s Houston Gamblers kind of offense with Jim Kelly. That ain't happening, yo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice idea, and that's what it should be. But until it happens, I don't see it ever happening. And especially whenever you consider the fact that Kelly has been, you know, he's had his diaper changed by O'Brien. O'Brien breastfed him. O'Brien taught him how to walk. O'Brien, you know, was with him every step of, you know, his entire coaching career, going back to his time as a graduate assistant at Penn State. And so he's just an extension of Bill O'Brien, so Kelly is. He's not here to bring in some new crazy, you know, wild ideas at all. He's just, again, like, he's a tentacle coming off O'Brien is all he is.
Yeah, and one of the really, like, really important thing about this is that, and you've made a great point, which I deeply appreciate of hitting this in your articles, is that we ran the type of offense we ran this year in order to protect the, or in 2019, in order to protect the defense, right?
Well, that's the defense, idea.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only good reason for the offense they ran last year.
Right, right. Well, it also fits in Bob's entire mold as far as play calling offense. Well, in the offseason, the defense has actually gotten worse. So do you think Bill O'Brien's going to go, is going to say, hey, Tim Kelly, let's go score 70 points when the other team can score 70 points on us just as easily? The answer is no. So it's going to be about ball control and it's going to be about keeping the other team's offense off the field. We're not going to open anything up with the defense being as trash as it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and hopefully the idea is that they fall kind of like, you know, we fell in 2018, where it's kind of like you, in a weird way, you wanted Houston to fall behind or be close in the third quarter, because then they would actually start pushing the ball downfield. Like that win against the New York Jets on Saturday Night Football is a perfect example of that, where it's like it's 13-10, it's the third quarter, and now they're pushing the ball downfield. Now the offense is this entirely different thing that you would envision it to be. So the Texans currently have Jordan Thomas and Akins, Darren Fells, Kahale Waring, Kiki Cutie, Randall Cobb, Kenny Stills, Will Fuller, and DeAndre Carter on the offense. So, like, do you see where Cooks fits at all in this wide receiver group? Like, are you whenever you close your eyes and see Brandon Cooks, what do you see him doing in this Texans offense?
I can't visualize it. I can't even visualize it, because I can visualize Will Fuller's role. But what you're missing is you're missing that complementary skill set from that DeAndre Hopkins gives you. So I can't, when I look at the Texans and how they're going to run their offense next year, I can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not fill me with any sort of like confidence whatsoever.
Yeah. The best idea I have is I think he won't be used how he was in Los Angeles. So in 2018, Los Angeles, he was in the slot 70% of his routes. And, like, you know, a lot of it has to do with Cobb's injury, where he had to play in the slot a lot more. But again, like, one of the things that I really like about watching Cooks play, whenever I went back and watched the video, was how he can run deep routes out of a slot like that. Like, it's really cool how he can run those out and ups and how he can get wide on those nine routes and stuff too. And so I don't really see him being used in the slot very much in Houston at all, because they have Randall Cobb, and I think they're going to try to limit how much you get shorter passes because of the concussions. I don't see the jet sweeps happening. I don't see the screen passes happening. I really don't see anything of that at all. Instead, if I had to guess, he'd be used how New England used him, where he was fourth in average depth of target, 16.5. Had 46 deep target receptions, and he averaged 6.4 yards a target on those plays. And he was one of the five best deep receivers in football in 17 New England. And so that's the best idea I have whenever I think about how he'll fit in with this team next year.
Sorry for the typing. My son's calling. One thing I kind of keep going back to, and I don't like the logic behind it, but I think that the Texans truly see Cooks as a number one kind of receiver. So you're not. I agree that we're not going to see him in the slot, but I think they see him as a legit replacement for DeAndre Hopkins, and I think they're going to try to use him as such. So when you talk about, you know, getting the ball down the field and those sorts of things, I don't. I mean, are we going to be 100% on Will Fuller being healthy again to do those sorts of things? Are we going to let Brandon Cooks do that? Are we going to let Kenny Stills do that? These are the sorts of things that I don't see, because I don't see Will Fuller playing more than five or six games. I don't see Will Fuller being on the roster opening day either. So there's that. So I don't know how they intend on using him. Look, Cooks has been a legit wide receiver one on the outside in his career. I'm not sure if he's that at this point of his career, but I think that's the role he needs to try to play anyway. Yeah.
And he's like and it's weird, cause he's like a pseudo wide receiver number one. Like, he puts up the stats of it, but the way he does it isn't really what you have from it. And all those teams that he's been that, like, number one wide receiver, he's kind of just been like, part of a stable of other good receiving options too. Like, he's never carried an offense at all. He's always been a complimentary piece in a really good offense. Even going back to his time in New Orleans, so they had Michael Thomas there too. So the big question I kind of have, and the thing I see from this trade, is I don't think this trade is it. I don't see this trade as a finalization of anything. I think this is a trade before more moves happen. And, you know, even after this trade occurred, I just had Cal McNair in my ear, you know, talking about that little bug and how, you know, we got plenty of other good moves, a lot of things down the pipe. They're going to get the fans excited. And so I think this Cooks trade was one of those moves he was alluding to. I think the Texans had planned to trade for Cooks, and I think they had something in place. Mainly they're waiting for the Rams to pay that roster bonus so then they could shed $4 million of that salary this year, which went along with the thinking of this trade too. And so I think this is a trade that happens before other trades are made. So Will Fuller is a cap hit of $10.16 million. This is the fifth year of his rookie contract. Next year he's going to be a free agent. And Stills is in the last year of his contract, and he's owed $7 million. So do you think Will Fuller's on the roster next year?
No. I don't think Fuller's on the roster, and I don't even know if Stills is on the roster, which would be a crying shame. So Brandon Cooks is on the Texans for two big reasons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's because he has a long relationship with Jack Easterby.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making fun of any religion, so please don't take it like that. But because he tweets Christian things, and that really excites Easterby.
He honks for Jesus.
Yeah, so I see that Brandon Cooks at this point was kind of destined to be on the roster, but I don't see how Stills stays on, especially because Kenny Stills is an outspoken young man. I don't know how many baby mamas he got, but he better not be more than one. And I don't see Will Fuller necessarily being on the roster because he can't stay healthy. And yeah, I can't really blame the Texans for that one, though. I would give him a shot. I don't see either of those guys being around on opening day unless we keep trading our draft picks and we don't take anybody to replace them.
Yeah, I think Still stays on the roster because he's healthy. And I think Bill O'Brien's really tired of this whole, you know, Will Fuller play? If he plays, he plays. And I have this entire game plan developed with him being on the field, and he plays three plays and he's out for the entirety of it. So I think Stills is here next year. I think Fuller is going to get traded, though. And if I was running a football team and I could get Will Fuller for a third round pick as a scratch off ticket, I'd rather have full, you know, and I had cap space as well too. Like, I'd rather have Will Fuller than, you know, the ability to take Curtis Weaver or, you know, Bradley and Nye in this year's draft class. And so I do think Fuller probably gets traded, and maybe he gets traded as early as, you know, the week leading up to the draft, or Fuller could even possibly get traded for a veteran pass rusher, or a veteran cornerback, or a veteran safety, because the Texans, again, had the 26th ranked pass defense by DVOA. They had the worst short pass defense by yards allowed per attempt, and it's a pass defense that only added Eric Murray and Timmy Jernigan to it. And so that's still the big need entering this draft, too. So I could see Fuller getting traded for, like, a third-round pick, or see him get traded for some sort of veteran help on the pass defense side.
Yeah, and the other hand of that, would we get a third round, or would Bill O'Brien send him for a fifth or sixth?
Well, that's true. Because what could he get for him?
I think Fuller's
market value should be like a third round pick, just based off like his talent and what he's shown before. And like, I would rather have Fuller as a lottery ticket than like a third round selection who may or may not be a starter. Like, I think it's a risk we're taking. But again, like, what team is going to give the Texans team that who have been bamboozled out of every trade out there? But like, I think it's fair market value to be a third round pick.
But he has he's not under contract. So you're giving away a third round pick for a guy who ain't tied up.
But you can tag him next year if you need to, if he has a good season or whatever. You know,
you're gonna tag. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But we're talking about also like Super Bowl contending teams. Yeah, I mean, if he was healthy all last year and had 1,500 receiving yards and 10 touchdown catches in these seasons you imagine whenever he's actually on the field. And also, if you're talking about a team that's close to contending, a lot of these teams have a lot of mid-round picks because they collect these picks from, yeah, you know, compensatory picks and those sorts of things. And they have an overabundance of them. And if, like, you're close to contention, somebody on a 10-year, $10 million contract for 1 year is the exact sort of contract that you want to take on, you know?
I've got a question for you. You get to write all the questions. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Why is Brandon Cooks the most traded person in football history?
I don't know. I think my best guess, is the fact that he's not like a number one wide receiver where he can carry an entire offense on his own, but he's paid like one. And I think it's that, and the fact that he's been able, if somebody offers you a first round pick for a deep threat, it's kind of hard to give up in some situations too. And he's like good at this one thing. He's good at being like a really great deep receiver, but other parts of his game are lacking.
I mean, I just can't get past the fact that the Rams are willing to take the biggest salary cap hit in NFL history to dump him.
Yeah. Oh, I can see it though. They don't have any first round picks as the Ramsey trade. They're in salary cap hell. And they have to pay Cook. I mean, they have to pay Goff, you know, $40 million this year. They have to pay Aaron Donald $20-plus million. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do with Ramsey. And again, they need cost control capital because they don't have any, they don't have their first-round draft picks, and they have an expensive roster.
Yes. There's some logic behind it. That's a hell of a penalty to pay. Even if you're the Rams, that's still a hell of a penalty to pay.
I mean, well, I mean, like, it's they're kind of like, I mean, a second round pick's a great pick for that trade, though. Like, you think about Houston traded name redacted and included a second round pick along with it, too. And, like, obviously he wasn't useful at all, like how Cooks is useful. But for the spot the Rams are in, like, I don't think a team has to win a trade at all. I think both teams, I think Los Angeles benefited. Like, this trade makes more sense for Los Angeles than it makes for Houston. And I think this was a really, like, an easy decision for them to make, you know.
I agree with that. And here's the other reason I agree with that is I would far rather have number 57 than Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask you. So this is supposed to be a deep wide receiver class, and the Texans traded number 57 overall for Cooks. So, like, from a Houston perspective, would you rather have Cooks or pick number 57?
There are so many things that go behind this. And here's the one thing that I cannot get past and that is really starting to piss me off in every way. Yeah, sorry, I kind of cussed there. You can't say that on FCC. You can't say pissed off.
You can say pissed.
You can't. Actually, I once got threatened with a fine by the FCC for that in 1990, 1991. Anyway, so
we're on open waters. They have no law here. We're pirates, you know.
That's true. I'm gambling behind me, and there's Filipino trannies everywhere. It's awesome. Anyway, but what pisses me off is this is yet another mortgaging the future for the present for Bill O'Brien kind of deal. Is that we gave up we had the 57 pick, we traded it for an old dude with concussion problems who I don't really see having a career much longer than 2 or 3 years, and I'd also like to go back and touch on that a little bit later, but we continue to mortgage the future. We traded first and second round. Our first, second, and first for Laremy Tunsil, traded second round for Brandon Cooks. We got trash back from the Cardinals for DeAndre Hopkins. It's like the Texans are actively trying to avoid taking high picks in the NFL draft. And I think that's because they damn well know they don't have the capability of scouting the players and making good trades.
Mm-hmm.
Look, that might be projection. That might be what I just see as an outsider, but why keep trading these guys? Because all the team is doing is getting older. It got faster for a change, but it keeps getting older at the expense of our team being better in the future. Mm-hmm. We're going to look back and we're going to see we traded all these first round and second round picks, and we've got an older roster, and it's going to be hurting, Matt.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And I really think what the Texans are going to become, they're going to become the Los Angeles Rams, or they're going to be in salary cap hell, except they won't have a Super Bowl appearance to show for it. It's even the difference between the two teams, where you could see them in like 2023 having a dumb Tunsil and try to rebuild around Watson. And really the biggest difference, though, is that, you know, Watson's a fringe top five quarterback and, you know, Goff isn't. I don't know. It's an interesting question to have, though. Like, would you rather have the 57th overall pick or Cooks? And this is a deep wide receiver class, but then you have to think about, well, if I draft him, is this guy going to be good or not? Which, you know, you really don't know. You don't know what you're going to get out Fuller, but at the same time, like, you don't know what you're going to get out Cooks, and so there's a lot of uncertainty involved with it. Personally, and then the contract as well, too, it's only $8 million this year. You can release him after the season. This could be a rental contract in a way, too, if it doesn't work out. Personally, I'd rather have pick number 57 than Cooks, and the main reason why is that you're about to pay Tunsil $20 million a year. You're about to pay Watson $35 to $40 million a year. You need all the cost control capital that you can get. And like, if the DeAndre Hopkins trade was actually for money, then there's your source of, like, that second round pick is your source of cost control capital, where if you get a starter there, you pay him $2 million for 4 years, and, you know, fine, I guess, whatever. It's not DeAndre Hopkins, but fine. You're able to mitigate some of the cap problems that you're going to have paying Watson and Tunsil that much. And so the Texans don't have that all anymore. And again, the Hopkins trade was not about money. It never was. It was a locker room issue. It was a chemistry issue. It was however you want to describe it like that. It was a disgruntled employee-employer relationship because Bill O'Brien, you know, isn't very good at dealing with people, especially whenever they're not on his side and in the doghouse and that sort of thing. And it wasn't a trade made because Hopkins wanted a pay raise with 3 years left on his contract and no leverage at all.
No, and I just can't. I can't underscore how terrible that trade was and how this, it was such a football teams should not be making personnel decisions based on hurt fifis. And that's what Bill O'Brien did.
Mm-hmm. And he's done it before.
And it's not the first time.
Yeah. And he's made this, you know, and I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, even going back to Dwayne Brown, Dwayne Brown was a trade made like that. The Clowney was traded because of that. Hopkins was traded because of that. And Tunsil was traded for because Howard can play tackle, Sharpen can play tackle, and Matt Khalil can play tackle.
God, this I just cannot remember like a football team like the Browns went through quarterbacks for a while there, like it was nothing, and they might still, depending on how Baker Mayfield, you know, develops or doesn't.
If he can stay in the pocket a little bit, instead of being a coward.
Yeah, and God, Freddie Kitchens really messed with them this year too. But I just can't remember a franchise being as absolutely inept at making personnel decisions how the Texans have been the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, ever since, I mean, I think since they drafted Watson, the only really great decision they made was drafting Justin Reed.
Yeah, that's it.
And everything, and like, even if, like, again, like, I'll stand by the Rankin pick being good. I'll stand by the Davenport pick still or whatever, but like, they still mismanage their personnel on the entire offensive line and allow it to get to the point that they're at where, you know, Kendall Lamb's your starting left tackle and, you know, week five or whatever it came out to. But yeah, I mean, it's really been like since Watson, this entire thing has just been kind of, you know, a blizzard of shit since that point. And they're trying to do this weird thing where they're trying to compete while not necessarily
not competing.
And they're like just so like in between things. It's really weird. Like to not spend any money in free agency and then use trades as a way where you're giving up too much to acquire. You're putting more out there than what you're getting in return constantly, and eventually it's going to hurt you. And you even go back to the Tunsil trade last year. What made the Tunsil trade great last year is that they gave up zero current assets for that player. They gave up only future assets, and now here they are. And contracts are coming due, and now Hopkins all of a sudden is too expensive. Now Clowney was too expensive last year, and this is what happens to it. Now you lose that cost control capital, and now you're having to do things to make up for it. And Hopkins isn't even a money decision, but if it is, that's a direct result of the Laremy Tunsil trade too.
Yeah, those future assets are now current assets.
Yeah,
and it happened
pretty quickly.
Kick us in the assets. Yep.
And the other thing I don't get either is this idea that, oh, we're a rebuilding football team, or we're building a team. You can build a football team in an offseason. It doesn't take that long. The contracts are very fluid. You don't have to be stuck to anybody at all. You can have one good draft class and can change your team entirely. And with how short the season is, the amount of variance that comes into it too, you can make an enormous jump in win-loss record immediately. We see it every single year. And so, like, I don't understand that reasoning at all either. Like, it's not baseball. It doesn't take 6 years to create a great football team.
Well, I think what we see in the Brandon Cooks trade ultimately is that Bill O'Brien doesn't want to deal with the rookie. He doesn't want to deal with any level of uncertainty that he can't control, which is icy tape of Brandon Cooks as an NFL pro.
Yeah.
What we also see is that he fits the really super necessary at this point profile of being the right person is the way I'm going to say it. Being the right person. Brandon Cooks doesn't have a MERS.
Yeah.
You know, and then we don't know what the offseason is going to look like either.
Uh-huh.
So I think what you see is Bill O'Brien trying to control what he control as well as he can. But the problem is that everything is a risk reward trade off, and Bill O'Brien has decided he's going to take the reward and he's going to piss it away in order to level set the risk as well as he can. And I think it's just an extraordinarily poor decision to do that, and it absolutely drives me up the wall. This is about Bill O'Brien being a chicken.
Yeah, they paid for certainty to a certain extent. So as long as Cooks' brains work, you know, and his head works, and you know the concussions are a long term effect. This trade makes sense.
And they
because,
are.
Well, we don't know. I mean, we can assume so, but we don't know for sure. You know,
we know they are. The science is our friend.
But I have no. I'm not going to say for sure about somebody's injuries, what they have and don't have. My medical knowledge expands to taking health freshman year of high school. That's the extent of my medical knowledge. So who knows what's going to happen as far as the head stuff goes. But really, like, O'Brien went for certainty to a certain extent and turning groin, calf strains, hamstring strains into this, you know, big loop, this big looming, even worser injury and concussions for that ability to be like, well, at least I know I have this whenever I go to game plan, unless, you know, he takes a bad hit again, which can happen as early as week one or in the preseason or whatever. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen as far as that goes.
Just shaking my head. That's all I can do.
That's fine. So in effect, the Texans trade DeAndre Hopkins for Brandon Cooks, David Johnson, and the ability to move up 17 spots in the NFL draft. So what do you think? Did the Texans get the most out of the Hopkins trade? And would you rather have Hopkins or this assortment of players?
So, when I used to do fantasy baseball, this is what we would call a conglomeration of Scheiße trade. So I'm going to cuss in German. I don't know if the FCC knows German, but I'll cuss in German. I'm just going to keep throwing players at you until you give me what I want. And, oh, wait, my team got worse. And I think that's what the Texans did by giving up Hopkins for David Johnson and Brandon Cooks and moving up 17 spots in the second round. We traded Hopkins for a conglomeration of trash.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it again. I want to really make sure I beat this point home. There are 50 guys in the NFL who can do what David Johnson does.
50. There's more. At least 50. Well, and also 50. It's not even that, but it's also there's probably like 50 guys who, and even upcoming rookies, there's that many guys that you can also get to do what he does for like $1 million, you know?
For league minimum, yeah.
Personally, Carlos Hyde's one of my least favorite players in the history of the franchise because last year we had to watch him run a first down over and over again, and then he turned down this contract extension, and now all of a sudden David Johnson's a three down back and all this sort of stuff. And I you know, you don't root for a player to be bad or whatever, but like Johnson's gonna be very underwhelming next year, and everybody has to be very confused who, you know, hasn't bought into this because of his numbers in 2016. You know what I mean? Or they felt that Arizona didn't do what he does best, which is jump cut 4 years ago, you know, because they try to run like stretch zone things like that with him. It doesn't work out very well. But even like his you know, zone scheme inside zone plays, he would run into safeties and he wouldn't run hard. And even like his receiving talent, most of that came in the slot against bad linebackers. Like he wasn't like a great swing route receiver. He couldn't break any tackles at all either. I mean, the Johnson trade is the worst part of this, you know, getting Cooks or whatever. I think this trade is fine. I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's fine. Like I understand why they made the trade, but it's not going to move the needle, you know, a whole lot this year. But it's an interesting trade. You know, personally, I'd rather have pick number 57 than Cooks, but I can see the value of Cooks on this team and that certainty as long as his, you know, head's okay.
Yeah, and it's so funny because when Matt was saying it, I was making my fine,
yeah,
like big,
exasperated
fine. But you know, I don't want. Fine. I'm tired of mediocrity. I'm tired of being a 9-7 quality team. I'm tired of it. You know, I'm 50 years old. I turned 50 this year. Hopefully I make it. It's only 4.5 months away. And I've never had an NFL championship. Like the last Houston NFL, not NFL, AFL championship was 1961.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite around in 1961. And that's 60 years ago anyway. I'm tired of the mediocrity, and this to me is another. This has been an off season of cluster kitten, and this trade for Brandon Cooks is stupid, and I can understand it. It's fine. I'd rather have number 57, but really, getting David Johnson on the team and asking him to do what we should have paid Carlos Hyde to do is Carlos Hyde is a much better fit. We saw it with Lamar Miller. I mean, look, there's really no difference between Lamar Miller and David Johnson in any way. But we're paying David Johnson whatever,
I didn't see
$9 million a year to do that.
Like really, so the only benefit of Johnson's that you have a guy who, if it's first and 10, you may throw, you may pass, you don't know. Whereas if Hyde's in there on first and 10, it's like they're probably gonna run the football. Like that's the benefit. That's what you got out of David Johnson.
And so why not start Duke Johnson?
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, Duke Johnson's one of the best receiving backs in football, and David Johnson's not that. And, like, Johnson's had one really great year. Like, that's it.
That's it.
And I really feel like they pulled up Rick Smith's scouting reports and was like, wow, this guy's awesome. And here we are 4 years later. The other thing weird thing about
it was,
the...
If it was 2016, we'd be rocking the cat box with these trades.
Oh, hell yeah. Even Hopkins for pick number 57 after Johnson's 2016 season, that would even be a bad trade. Or pick number 40, my mistake. 40 right. And 2016 Johnson, that would be a bad trade. 2020 Hopkins for pick number 40 and Johnson is, you know, one of the all-time dumbest trades out there. So for the Texans draft that comes up in 9 days or so, has this changed at all what you want to see the Texans do in the NFL draft? Are you all on the pass defense? Has any changed as far as you feel about that? Or even if they had 2 second-round picks, are you rather being like, well, they should get an edge player and interior defensive line in the second round, or are you just like, yeah, they should go interior defensive line, for example?
I'm going to say I think they need to go edge. I think we need not Whitney Merciless out there. I think we can get some IDLs a little bit later.
Yeah.
But I haven't like been able to deep dive into the draft, so I don't want to pretend to be some sort of pro in what we're, you know, what we should do. But the number one thing we need to focus on at this point in time is getting to the quarterback. I mean, I said it earlier, this defense is worse than it was today, is worse than it was in 2019, which is really saying something. But losing DJ Reader is a really big freaking deal. I don't care that we re-signed Bradley Roby. I don't care at all. But Reader at least gave us a push for 5 games. We don't have that on the roster. I like Timmy Jernigan a lot. He's no DJ Reader. So we need to figure out a way to get to the quarterback early and often. If we don't, this is going to be a really terrible defense.
Yeah, it's hard to find guys who rush the passer right away in the draft. Like last year, you know, in the first round, you know, even Rashawn Gary didn't do much. Montez Sweat didn't do much. Josh Allen was spectacular last year. Burns was really good. But in the mid rounds, the only guy who really made impact rushing the passer was, you know, Max Crosby. And that was really kind of it whenever you think about those mid rounds.
He can play the run at all.
But, you know, who cares?
Yeah,
but
really.
Like it's hard to find guys immediately. I like the idea of an interior defensive lineman just because they need somebody who can push the pocket, because if they don't, Whitney Merciless doesn't do anything. And Merciless is going to play 98% of the snaps next year. And so I think they're going to have to have a guy who can drive the pocket like that. And the edge prospects, I mean, like Bond, I think is really kind of like, I think he's a high floor guy. I don't really see the ceiling with him. I love Marlon Davidson mainly because nobody's ever played football like him before. But I haven't watched interior defensive line. I'm going to start tomorrow. But that's where I'm leaning towards in the second round still too. But I would rather have a chance to take an interior defensive lineman and an edge defender in the second round than have Cooks on this team, you know?
Totally. Because we could have gotten a wide receiver who can do things in the third or the fourth. I mean, mm-hmm. A lot of good drafting teams can do that. We don't.
And it's supposed to be an all-time great wide receiver class too.
Right. And I just want to say, I am in deep love with CeeDee Lamb. I just absolutely adore the dude.
Yeah. I've just seen that same clip of him breaking 17 tackles against UT.
That's what you
see all over Twitter right now.
I just think he's going to be fantastic. I think he's going to be Odell Beckham good.
Interesting. Yeah, what I usually do at the draft is I watch everybody Houston has a chance to take, and then I'll go back and watch the other guys in the first round just so I have an idea of, like, feel. I'm like, okay, well, he's playing for this team, so he fits in this role, and, you know, this makes sense, you know? Like, I don't watch Washington, but if Chase Young goes to Washington, I'll have to watch the Redskins next year. Because him, Sweat, Hand, they have that other Payne, and then you'd have Thomas on there too, and Kerrigan. That's a lot of fun. That's a fun football team.
They're going to get to the quarterback.
Yeah. And they're all young too, and they can they're going to be the 49ers in 2 years, you know, except then they can always trade for a quarterback if Haskins is whatever. So that's enough of that. So let's get to some of our listener questions tonight. The first one's from @SammyBissett. BFT, who is the breakout offensive player to watch this year? Since, you know, 60 to 70% of the offense might actually be broken by week 11.
I love that question, by the way. I saw that. I don't even know how to answer this. I would like it to be Kenny Stills, because I think he has enough talent to do a lot of damage. I mean, he Kenny Stills, Brandon Cooks, when he came out of Oregon, ran a 4.33 40. So did Kenny Stills. Like, Kenny Stills has a lot of that skill set. So I would love to see him be the guy. And I also, because I think he has badass within him. And so that's who I'm overtly rooting for, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Mine, of course, is Kahale Waring. He's so hot, and he has that beautiful smile. And he has, like, you know, 10 abdominal muscles. And, I mean, like, his college video I really enjoyed. Like, I thought he could be a good blocker. He can actually stretch the seam. I've kind of spent some of his time working from home from, like, watching stuff while I work. So I've been watching, like, a bunch of, like, Coaches Clinics videos, and they talk about how important it is to defend the deep middle and defending the hashes and how much space the safety needs to be able to make throws off where they can make plays, the sideline stuff. And they don't have that. And I think, you know, if they have a guy who can stretch the seam, this whole vertical passing idea offense makes a lot more sense. But I don't expect Warren to even be on the team by, you know, August or whatever. But that's who I'm hoping and praying for.
I like that take. I don't think it's realistic, but he absolutely needs to be.
Like, I think he can block as good as Fells immediately this year.
Well, so can I.
Yeah, probably so.
I could just be a speed bump.
Yeah. Do you just run, like, dive at people's legs, you know? Just pick a hip and let it and slingshot it.
I totally need more concussions.
The next question is from Carlos Flores at CLF961205. Make sure to give him a follow. He's more than a friend of the podcast. He's a blood brother now and writes for the website. He asked, the offense seems to be built for speed with his current lineup. If he swapped out Brian with other play callers from the league, what kind of results could you expect, i.e. Bieniemy, Harbaugh, Shanahan?
Kevin Gilbride.
Who's that?
He's one of the run-and-shoot architects.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that's who I would want running this team. It's somebody of that mindset, somebody who's going to give us four verts and or three verts and a couple of crossers. And he's going to create a lot of havoc. I would absolutely love to see somebody like that who's going to do good things with, you know, one running back, four wide receiver sets. It just, yeah, that's who I'd want.
Yeah. Houston should never have a tight end lined up on the line of scrimmage next year. You know what I mean? They shouldn't. Like, make him play in the slot or put him in, like, a flex wing position or even put him in the backfield, you know? There's so many – they shouldn't be running any sort of, like, tank personnel or anything like that. I love Bieniemy. That's my wet dream for if O'Brien actually does get fired and they go out there and find somebody else. That's who I'm holding out for and hoping for one day. But he'll just end up coaching, like, the Bengals next year anyways. The next question is from @SmithGrandma. How many weeks until Bob resumes play-calling duties?
Zero. I just don't even think he's really going to give up the play calling duties. I don't at all. I don't have any faith in that happening.
I'm going to say week four. I think they're going to be like, or maybe either week four or week five. They'll be like 1-3 or something like that. And then he's going to talk in the media about how, you know, he feels more comfortable doing this job. And Kelly's doing a heck of a job. I really trust him in this position, but, you know, there's some changes that we need to make, and it starts with me. You know what he needs? You know what O'Brien needs?
I know a lot of things he needs.
I hate referencing Harry Potter mainly because, like, Harry Potter's now...
You look like Fred and George.
Oh, I did one of those I did that stupid, like, character test. It's like, who are you? And I got Hagrid. It really made me mad. Because I'm just, like, living in a hut with all this hair with my dog, you know? But,
Do you see your own camera, by the way? I just want you to...
Yeah, I know what I look like. Uh-huh. I know what I look like. But I hate it because it's like every single millennial, they reference like bad or good things to Harry Potter. So I hate making references like this, but he needs that hourglass that Hermione has so she can go like 15 different classes. I don't care what it's called, but that's what Bill O'Brien needs.
I can't remember. Damn, I should. I'm a total Harry Potter geek and I can't remember.
So... this is another question from Smooth Grandma. Let's play over under real fast. You ready? Uh-oh. Charles Omenihu sacks 4.5.
Yay. I'm going to go over.
I'm going to say under. Jacob Martin sacks 6.
Under.
I'd say 6 exactly. Lonnie Johnson quarterback rating against 109.5.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to take the over on that one.
Yeah, I'll take the over too. I really have enjoyed the Lonnie Johnson footwork clips.
Footwork, yeah.
Because it's like the stuff I would do. If I was trying to learn how to play cornerback, those are the type of footwork drills I'd be doing, you know, as I try to learn how to play the position.
When you're 24 years old, yeah.
Well, I'm older than that, but I'm not a second round pick who is, you know, who's 6'1" and whatever. JJ Watt games played 6.
I'm going to take the over on that.
Eight. He has 8.
I'll still take the over on that.
Will Fuller, 11.
Under.
I'd say under. Games played before Jonathan Joseph signed to be a starting cornerback for.
Oh, God. You're going to put me on suicide watch? Five.
Yeah, he has 4. I'm going to say under. Times Watson's caught staring O'Brien with murder eyes per game. 6.
Love it. Yep, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I'll go at least 6.
Over. Yeah.
It's going to be like 3rd and 8. He's going to have nowhere to go with the ball. And then he's just going to throw it. I'm be like, yeah, that should have been DeAndre over there. Or like whenever Cooks runs a sideline route, gets squeezed, or he runs a fade and gets squeezed to the sideline. And that's his only option. And he can't go up and catch it.
Yep.
This is from good friend. Good pal of mine at tschmidt723. What is an ideal rest of the Texans offseason looks like if everything went the way you draw it up? He asked us, of course, before the Cooks trade.
I mean, I've only got one answer to that, and I'm probably anybody who's listening to the podcast knows. It's get rid of Bob. Oh, there was an article, was it Athletic or somebody, that Bill O'Brien on the hot seat with all these horrible trades. It's like, no, he's not. He's not at all.
Not going anywhere. They would have to go. And like I mean, we did the conference call. The first thing he does is say the Cows are great. The McNairs are great. I love them very much. They would have to go 4-12, and even then, that probably wouldn't do it.
No. Yeah. To answer your question, I think we need to go into the draft looking for help on the defense. Let's not even bother with the offense at this point. If every one of our draft picks was defensive, I would be good with it.
Yeah, I agree too. Make them all defense. And then if you had to trade Will Fuller, get a third round pick or get some sort of veteran pass rusher. Or even like just sign like Claiborne or Marcus Golden. You know, there's a few guys out there.
I think Golden's gone. I thought Golden was gone.
I don't think so. I think Okay. Everybody's waiting until after the NFL draft to sign. The next question is from @Lynn_Cooper. What are the odds Bill tries to turn the card of a player already drafted? And this is going to be through Zoom, which is going to be fun too. Also, I was cracking up when Carlos was like, maybe it wasn't Carlos, it was somebody on Twitter said, make sure to tell Bill O'Brien. Oh no, it was Eddie. And he said, I guarantee you when they do the mock draft, O'Brien's going to put in players that he likes, not understanding it's a mock draft.
So
I'm going to put the odds here at, you know, I'm going to put the odds at 65%, but I think he's going to draft somebody he could have got undrafted in like the 3rd round more than anything because he's such a hard worker and he lives in the age of Pisces.
I don't see good things happening with the Texans drafting via Zoom. I don't. I think it's going to be a hilarious joke.
It's going to be fun to watch Kai anyways. It's just going to be a fantasy draft to begin with. The next question is from @StephStradley. You know, world famous Houston Texans fan. Do a true facts breakdown of the BR Texan cartoon. What was spot on? What could be added? What was not right? my favorite thing about it, and I think it was my favorite thing about it for sure was whenever Bill O'Brien's talking to Sean Watson and he's like, the general manager made this decision. He's like, you are the general manager. He's like, yeah, about that, and quickly moves on. Because every single time Bill O'Brien's been mentioned, the general manager, he refuses to acknowledge the fact that he is and says we have a lot of guys working very hard because it's not like that's how NFL operations work at all whatsoever.
I thought it was great. I think that's the single best thing that Bleacher Report has ever done, like, period.
And I think the only thing I didn't like about is O'Brien, too much hair. Way too much hair.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, he could have used a bigger chin.
Yeah.
And I also liked that leadership is yelling really loud at people.
Uh-huh.
That was an important one, too.
Yeah, always. Especially Bill.
Our last viewer question tonight was from at Captain Ron. I didn't understand this question. He was referencing something I've never seen before. But he asked, glass or plastic? Glass or plastic? Because if O'Brien keeps running the Texans franchise into the ground, you'll be either writing about more broken glass at NRG or how much less plastic people are using to buy tickets and logo gear. Both. I'm guessing... I don't know. Are they going to throw stuff at the stadium or stop going to the stadium? Which would happen first?
Those are kind of the same thing.
Well, it's
throwing
like
stuff are the stadium
gonna,
or not
are they
going to
are they going to just ignore the team entirely, or are they going to go there and flip cars over and flip trash cans over and throw bottles at the stadium? Take it more of a violent approach.
Nah, that's not a use. Violence is not really a Houston thing at this point in time. I don't think they're going to do that.
Yeah, I think if like it's week five and they're 1-4, people may stop going,
I hope
even
so.
Then, I don't know. Everybody keeps going.
I mean, that's my hope and dream is that this team is so bad that people stop going and Cal Mittner actually cares.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I've thought about it to myself, like, would I like to see this team do poorly so Brian gets fired? But I mean, Watson's so spectacular that every season's a gift, even if it can be a pair of socks sometimes. And I wouldn't want to see anything bad happen to Watson.
Right.
Yep. Even I'm not a utilitarianist whenever it comes to the Texans.
Yeah. Agreed.
But yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll go plastic and they'll kind of stop going maybe. If it's like week, I mean, even that 13 season, they still went when they were 2-14,
Yeah, but the team wasn't, even as bad as that team was, it still wasn't a dumpster fire. I think the team we put out there today is it more of a dumpster fire than it was in 2013?
Except for the quarterback position.
Right. One position.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing that's different. Yeah, so, I don't know. You have anything else at all?
I kind of do. I would just like to say that this team, like, because I can't remember who sent it out. Somebody sent it out, but we're going to have a thread on it in a day or two, is talking about kind of undoing what the Texans have done. And I think that this team really started to unravel when Dwayne Brown was traded for peanuts. I think that since that trade, this team has just been unraveling itself and has put non-football important things as a requirement over being a good football player.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about guys like, who are going out and murdering people like Stabby McLinebacker. We're talking about Dwayne Brown. We're talking about Clowney. We're talking about Hopkins now. Like, these guys aren't committing felonies kinds of things, but we're getting rid of them because they don't fit the Texans style, and that is not the way you build a football team.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It really has been a Dwayne Brown butterfly effect, and that's something that I for sure want to write probably in May or so after the draft's over, and I'll have to watch Jordan Elliott and that sort of thing.
Oh,
watch a Gilmore, I don't know, Blaylock from TCU. I'm excited to watch that guy, but yeah, I agree with you on that.
I just can't believe what this team has been reduced to as far as its personnel decisions. It seems to be on who Jack Easterby retweets. That seems to be who we're dependent upon to build this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had been retweeting Cooks for like 2 years now. And now here he is, and Hopkins is gone and everything else. And then it was also weird, too, because they've been linked to David Johnson even going back to last year. If he was on the trade block and the Texans were sniffing around, there were some kind of like rumors like that about it, too.
Like, Bill O'Brien knows what to do with David Johnson. Like, Bill O'Brien knows what to do with Brandon Cooks.
I don't think anybody knows what to do with David Johnson now.
Yeah. Like
at least get Kenyon Drake out of the deal, At least get Kenyon Drake.
At least
get somebody who can play football.
Oh, okay.
But Johnson's tough, smart, and dependable. Randall Cobb's from a blue-collar town, Kentucky. He's tough, smart, and dependable. But it never ends. Cooks, maybe. Who knows how his head goes? And I guess Fuller's not tough, smart, dependable. So that's where I think Fuller goes and still stays. And maybe they draft somebody who's tall or whatever. Who knows? Maybe Jalen Strong can come back and play here and stop selling marijuana legally in California, whatever it is he's up to. I think that's what he ended up doing after he retired. He started his own like medical marijuana thing or something like that. But
good for him.
Yeah, good for Jalen. So that's our show for tonight. We'll be back on later this week to talk interior defensive line prospects with Texans thoughts and probably Kenneth. And that should be a fun one. That's my most excited. I'm most excited to watch that position because I think that's the best way this defense can improve next year is if they can get somebody who can rush the pass from the interior, which is something I've been saying for, I guess, like 2 or 3 years now or so. So that will be fun. We'll do that later this week. And then the NFL draft is going to happen next week, and we'll have plenty of stuff on the website, on the podcast for, I guess, the next 3 weeks or so, you know.
Yep, I'm going to go start looking at quarterbacks, hopefully tonight.
It'd be fun.
Just do my thing.
Let me know what you think of Herbert and Love.
Yeah.
Because I think Tua and Burrow are going to be great, as long as Burrow's just not older than everybody and Tua doesn't get hurt. But I think they'll go 1-5.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I don't really see. The biggest thing is accuracy. And if you look at the accuracy numbers for the other two guys, they're just too inaccurate, you know. And Herbert threw a lot of screens, and he was pretty inaccurate in catchable balls.
I haven't looked at any numbers. I do that every year on purpose.
Yeah, we'll have fun. I'm excited to read your little mock of sport. But until this weekend, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Balbert Radio.
Are you changing over the weekend?
No, this weekend we'll be back. And
until this weekend, my name is
Until this Matt. Weekend. Yeah. Yeah. Until yeah. this weekend. That's
sorry,
who I am. I should. I'm going to come out of this quarantine, you know, with a new name. And
you need to shave.
Yeah, a new face. I'm going to come out of this quarantine ugly and then handsome. But we'll be back on sometime this week. And thank you for listening to the show tonight. Thank you for being on BFD.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.